The Bob Siegel Show is made possible in part by ProBuild, Primetime Advertising Corporation, Web Studios, W&S Electric Incorporated, and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent KPRZ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the program which dares to be closed-minded. An open mind is a good thing to have at first, in the beginning, but the purpose of opening your mind about any subject is to examine the data, make an evaluation, and eventually close your mind. Whether or not the world rotates around the sun was an interesting discussion centuries ago, but scientists have long since closed their minds. It's time as well to close our minds about God. Not only does God exist, but God has made his existence known. In fact, he once visited this world in the form and likeness of a man, Jesus Christ, leaving a substantial imprint upon history. Maybe you disagree. Give me a call at 1-800-556-1210. In fact, I know our first caller disagrees. His name is Forrest, and Forrest called our program to tell me why Christianity is actually a myth. We'll look forward to his call in a few minutes, but first, let me introduce a woman who is certainly no myth, but she's so incredible, she may as well be, Sharon Cushard.
Oh, you are too kind. I love the way you somehow try to tie me into what you're saying each time.
Well,
that
you
is
just look like the kind of person needs to be tied to something, so we do what we can.
You know what? I was going to disagree with you, by the way, when you first said dares to be closed-minded. I'm thinking, wait a minute. I don't agree with that. But then as you went on with your little dialogue.
You don't agree that being closed-minded is a good thing?
Right. Yeah, I like to think of myself as open-minded.
Open-minded at first.
At first,
now that you know oxygen exists, you probably closed your mind.
Okay. But I don't think about it that way.
So what you're saying, Sharon, is you had your doubts, but after I brilliantly expounded on it, you kind of came
around. It was a pretty brilliant explanation,
well,
I must admit.
Shucks, folks.
Okay. Would you like to take an email before we get to Forrest's call?
Yes, in our grand time-honored tradition, we'll take an email or two to kick off.
Okay, and this comes from Jim. Jim evidently knows you from your ministry in Colorado. In fact, he asks when you're going to be coming back to Colorado.
Don't know, Jim. Boy, that was an easy question.
But no, he has something biblical,
too. He has a
follow-up
question.
Yes, he does. In Acts, Stephen was stoned by Jews. Only the Roman government could carry out capital punishment or give permission to do that. Did the Jewish leaders get permission from the Romans, or was the stoning done without Roman permission? And then wouldn't executing someone without Roman permission have gotten the Jewish leaders in big trouble with the Romans?
Yes, the Jews, for the most part, did not have a right under the Romans to execute people, but they did have a limited right if it was for a religious heresy. What's happening there in the case of Stephen, though, is it looked like a mob violence which got out of hand. And technically, they should have gone and asked the Romans. They didn't. But since Stephen was evidently not a Roman citizen, to the Romans, it would have just been some dead Judean. So probably the Romans didn't really give a hang. But yeah, they should have been asked. They weren't asked. And nothing ever came of it.
Okay. Here's another one. This is from Linda. And actually, this is from Linda when you met with her for coffee not too long ago. She is talking about John 2, and at first Jesus told his mother it wasn't time for him to do miracles yet, and then he changed his mind upon his mother's insistence to change water into wine.
So the question is, why did Jesus change his mind when he said, my time has not come yet, and
right.
he did it anyway? Well, I'll tell you, you could probably go to commentaries and listen to sermons and hear these fantastic expositions of the deep theological ramifications of Jesus changing his mind. I take a much simpler approach. Although God by identity, Jesus was incarnated. He did become a real human being. And I think his mother bugged him and just gave in. And I don't have anything more profound than that. Sometimes the simplest answer or the obvious answer is the correct one. But you could probably go to a commentary and read a 10-page essay if you want something better than that.
Okay,
that's
great.
It won't be correct, but if you want something that sounds better than that, go ahead and read that 10-page essay.
You sound close-minded about that.
Well, we do have to close our minds again once in a while, Sharon.
Okay, I have time, I think, for one more before we get to Forrest's call. This is from Angela in Lakeside, and she wants to know if you think God has one person picked out for her to marry.
Does God have one person picked out for us to marry? Does God have a perfect mate for us in heaven? We can't put God in a box, Angela. I'm guessing here that the answer she wants is yes, God does have someone for you, and here's how to find him. Actually, if you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, where the Apostle Paul talks about marriage, you could not possibly have a less romantic, more pragmatic view of marriage. Paul told the Corinthians that they could marry anybody they wanted as long as it was somebody who belonged to the Lord. As long as it was a fellow believer. That was the stipulation. And he encouraged them to use their heads. Now, could God pick out a mate for somebody? We have precedent for that in the Old Testament. Before Abraham died, he sent a servant out to find a young maiden, a young wife-to-be for his son Isaac. And his servant did go out and pray about it and say, God, give me a sign. And if I meet a woman who offers to water the camel as well as giving me a drink of water from the well, that will be the woman. That probably doesn't sound like much of a miracle today, but if you knew much about camels, that was a pretty significant prayer request, because camels would drink your well dry. It was very uncommon for somebody to let your camel take a drink. They might give you a drink, but it showed tremendous generosity if the person was going to let the camel drink from the well also. So in this particular case, it seems that God did have somebody, this young woman named Rebecca, set apart for Isaac. So he can, but we don't go out expecting that. If Christians would spend less time looking for signs and more time using their heads. I remember in college, I was engaged to a woman and we just didn't get along. Fortunately, we never got married. But I remember going to my youth pastor all the time and saying, oh, well, I prayed about it and I asked God for this to happen and that to happen. You know, those kinds of prayers. I have a yellow Volkswagen drive by my house at 3 in the morning and wake me. And I'm telling him about all these things that I prayed about. And finally, the guy just says, what about the fact that you don't get along, that you're not compatible, that you don't have anything in common? Can't these be signs from God too? So we have to sometimes take that practical approach. Therefore, once again, we don't put God in a box. God can bring somebody our way, but we don't necessarily expect it to happen. What we do expect to happen is to use our heads. And the one stipulation, the one perimeter that Paul used was that it belonged to the Lord. This person be a fellow believer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was great. Here's one from Mark in Santee, actually.
Okay, but we'll take Mark in Santee later on in the show. We will be back to take your phone calls, 1-800-556-1210. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
San Diego's family station. Remember, we're KPRZ, 1210 AM.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having a website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
APRZ, 1210 AM, San Diego's Family Station.
Okay, we have Forrest from Poway. How you doing, Forrest?
Pretty good. How about yourself, Todd?
Not bad, not bad. What's on your mind today?
Well, actually, I'd like to make a comment that I'm concerned that Christianity doesn't have true ideas that are appropriate for our time, and that it'd be interesting to come up with new ideas that help bring people together of all religions.
Okay, well now the central idea about Christianity is that human beings, despite all their good qualities, also have a side of their nature that tends to be selfish. When we look at the end of the 20th and beginning of the 21st century with all the war and crime and bloodshed and terrorism, do you really see evidence that that assessment of human nature is not actually a true one?
Well, I suppose you have a point, but what is a new idea for this time that would help people come together with differing ideas?
Well,
whether you're a Christian, whether you're of any other faith.
Yeah, well, I understand what you're saying, Forrest, and it's a good point. I do think we should always be open to new ideas, new styles, new fads, new music. But there are some ideals that are universal. Would you agree that human beings have a conscience which tells them right from wrong, and that regardless of whether we live in the 21st century or the first century when the Bible was written, that some of those ideas would just remain true? Would there be certain ideas that would remain true no matter what?
That's right. They could be. There's certain ideas that would that can remain in place no matter what your religion is.
Exactly. Okay, so we've agreed on that. Then what is it about Christianity specifically then that you think is, say, backward or behind the times? What do you think we've outgrown?
Well, it seems like there's a lot of myth that was interpreted for people to show people how to live 2,000 years ago, where they took ideas from life that were hundreds of years before that, and they wrote them down to try to help people deal with life.
Right.
A lot of these stories in the Bible and so forth are taken literally.
Okay, yes. Now, certainly, Forrest, if something was meant to be a fable or meant to be a story, we wouldn't want to take it literally. Are you aware that the men who wrote the Bible did not claim that they were writing stories, but claimed they were writing actual historical accounts? That was at least their claim.
Yeah, I'm not sure who wrote them and what they claimed, but the problem was that people that interpret these stories later claimed that these men were inspired by God.
Yes.
That made their words the word of God.
Well, when we say inspired by God, we sometimes have different ideas of what that means. The men who wrote the New Testament, for example, didn't claim that the Word of God popped out of the sky in a white box with a blue ribbon. But they were men who knew the person of Jesus Christ personally. And after Jesus died and resurrected, they were writing a chronicle of his life. Now, that's just one portion of the Bible, what we call the Gospels. But they were claiming that to be historically factual. They didn't claim that it was a myth. They didn't claim to be interpreting things. They claimed to be actually writing down what Jesus truly said.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but you have some reason to believe that they were inaccurate when they did that?
Well,
that it's not trustworthy as history?
The central idea that's hard for me to go along with is that basically we're on our way to another place. like heaven, and that we're on earth temporarily, and that,
right.
the earth could end. And I think that can give people the idea that we don't really have to respect our home as well as we should, and it doesn't work with environmentalism and preserving the planet, because, you know, it's all going to be over someday.
Okay, well, Forrest, you're making a very good comment. I do think that Christians have made the mistake of talking a little bit too much about heaven and hell and not always being conscious of the environment. What you seem to be raising, though, is a moral objection. That doesn't sound like an objection to the historicity of the Bible. What I think I hear you saying is you don't like the message that these men shared. Do you see how that's separate from what it sounded like you were saying before?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, regarding your concern about the message, I think I could take care of that pretty quickly. Jesus has frequently been misrepresented. There's been all kinds of hypocrisy in the church. And I'm not just saying that. I wasn't raised in the church myself. I was raised Jewish. And my people, throughout the years, from the Crusades and the Inquisition up to the Holocaust in the 20th century, have been murdered in the name of Jesus. But I'm sure you would agree with me that sometimes people's movements get falsely interpreted. Jesus himself, of course, never told people to go out and do that kind of stuff to the Jews or to anybody else. Jesus never taught that we shouldn't be conscious of our environment. Jesus never taught that we should be so hung up on heaven and hell that we don't care to make this world a better place. He talked quite a bit about making the world a better place. So I think you might want to consider the possibility that there's a difference between objecting to the hypocrisy that sometimes comes in the name of Christianity with the actual teachings of Jesus himself. You might be surprised to see that you and Jesus have more in common than you might have with some of the Christians that you've talked to.
Yes, I tend to agree. I think taking the Bible literally and then interpreting it, making a poor interpretation, is part of the problem, and people basically get the feeling that somehow they're better than others and that they're promised to be in heaven or something.
Yeah, well,
for
nice, right.
when everyone else is out of luck, unless they get on the game plan.
Yeah,
and then they'll use scare tactics to try to get people to cooperate, and that's a big turnoff. And I think if there's a new approach and some new language, and maybe the same ideas but coming out of other a more modern voice, that people are going to be receptive.
Okay, well, I think that's very profound of you, Forrest, and I think we're really getting somewhere, because at first we were talking about whether this was an old idea or a new idea. It's an old idea and a universal idea, but does it need some new language? Does it need a better vehicle to communicate today's culture? Absolutely. I, as a Christian, do not consider myself better than you or better than anybody else. In fact, the message of Christianity is the opposite of that. The message of Christianity is that we are all guilty of selfishness, and we are all in need of forgiveness, and we all need to turn to God. It's not a matter of who figured it out or who's living a better life. I don't consider myself anything but one beggar telling another beggar where the bread is. Does that make sense at all?
Yes, I suppose.
You suppose? Okay.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree that we need to be saved from anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the message that I think could be changed.
Well, when you say we don't need to be saved from anything, what do you mean exactly?
Why? Well, the original idea is that there was a sin that we have to pay for, and that we need to be saved from being sinners.
Right, a sin that that we're not able to pay for. Well, let me give you an example. If you were brought into a courtroom for having committed a crime, say you robbed a bank, and the judge said to you, the law says you have to pay for this crime, and you have to pay by either going to jail for 50 years, or you have to pay by paying the court $70,000. And you don't have $70,000, but you don't really want to go to jail for the rest of your life either. Supposing the judge, out of compassion, said, I'll tell you what, $70,000 has to be paid, but I'm going to write a check in your name for you. Take this to the clerk, and you're going to be released. And even though your sentence is going to be paid for, you do not have to be the one who paid for it. Now, if the judge handed you a check like that, what would go through your mind?
Well, I'd contemplate whether I was guilty in the first place and whether I wanted to take the easy way out and just get off the hook or make a statement.
Okay. Well, if you were guilty of robbing a bank, I assume you would, if you really had robbed a bank, you would probably agree that you were guilty, correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, that's part of the problem for me is I'm not agreeing that I'm guilty of anything and that I need to be forgiven for anything.
Okay. Well, when the Bible... Jesus said that when we talk about sin, it's important we understand what that means. Sin was defined in the Bible as selfishness. Jesus once said, as you would have people treat you, treat them. Anything in the Bible that is called sinful falls under that category. Well, Forrest, if you can, please hang with us over the break, and we'll talk some more.
KPRZ. Change your station. Change your life.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 cereal box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. If you wanted a guarantee, you should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS.
Win great prizes on the KPRZ Z Club.
New prize opportunities every week.
Go to KPRZ.com to find out more. The KPRZ Z Club.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Sharon Crichard. We're going to continue our stimulating conversation between Bob Siegel and Forrest.
So let me just ask if you agree with that broad principle. Do you agree that whether you were religious or not, whether you believed in God or not, is there something in your conscience which tells you that you should treat other people the way you would want to be treated by them?
Yes.
Okay.
I feel that I would want to give people the benefit of the doubt and treat them as how I wanted to be treated initially.
Okay.
But then I'm not going to continue to do that once I've learned a hard lesson that I was taken advantage of, and then.
Oh, absolutely.
I would cut my losses and not just be a doorman.
No, you're right. Absolutely, you're right, Forrest. And we're not talking, and God's not talking about you being taken advantage of, but just extending the courtesy to other people, people who are not trying to take advantage of you, extending to them the same courtesy that you would. Would you agree to this standard?
Yes, I would cut my losses.
Okay.
So respond to new people.
Uh huh. Okay.
And so basically...
Now, do you live by that standard 100% of the time? I don't. I'm not saying this to put you on the spot. I certainly don't.
No, it's something that I'd like to, you know, move towards being more consistent about.
Because, so see, there's
a philosophy that I'm trying to get
sure.
Back.
So there's a part of your nature that tells you this is a good standard, and there's another part of your nature that doesn't always live by that standard. That agrees 100% with what the Bible says. When the Bible says that you're a sinner, it means no more and no less than what you and I just agreed on.
Uh-huh.
This is an example of us putting it in a more modern phraseology. But it is the same message. So when the Bible talks about us being delivered from our sin, here's a good way to look at it. If I have a side of my nature that's good and a side of my nature that's selfish, a good side and a bad side, well, it's great that I have the good side. I still want to do something about the bad side. If I was half clean and half dirty, I could either take a shower and get completely clean, or I could walk around and say to people, just look at the clean half. Don't look at the dirty half. You see the analogy? It doesn't mean that you're some horrible
person and you've done nothing but sin, but all of us are guilty of sin at times, if not in our actions, at least in our motives and our thoughts. Jesus said, you've heard them say in the olden days, you shall not kill. But I tell you, anybody who's ever been angry at his brother without cause is a murderer. He says, you were told, do not commit adultery. But he says that anybody who's lusted after another man's wife in his heart is an adulterer. Now, I don't know about you, but if God could see into my heart, he's seeing some things that I wouldn't show other people. He's seeing things that in some cases might be X-rated and in other cases might make me look like a murderer, even though I've never gone out and actually done those things as an action. But it still says something to my nature. And since I don't have a button on my side which I can push and make that bad part of my nature go away, the whole idea behind Christianity is Jesus says you can have a relationship with my spirit in which he will come in and transform your nature, beefing up the good side and changing and transforming the bad side. And of course, his death on the cross was essentially that judge paying your $10,000. He says, I will forgive your past and I will give you a new future. All I ask is that you dedicate your life to me now. You talk about the guy in the court that was kind of getting off the hook easily. Actually, we don't get off the hook easily, because if that judge were going to pay you the $70,000, but you turned to him and said, well, thank you, Your Honor, the first thing I'm going to do is go out and rob another bank. At that point, the way our justice pardon system works, the pardon says, we're going to let you off if you promise not to do this again. So a person that comes to Jesus and says, forgive me my sins, and they're thinking inside so that I can keep sinning all I want, is only kidding himself. A person that gives their life to Jesus would not actually be taking the easy way out. They would be dedicating their life to Jesus. I know that was a mouthful. I want to give you a chance to respond.
Well, I don't think people want to dedicate their life to someone that lived 2,000 years ago.
Well, now we're getting back to whether or not it's accurate again. The whole message of Christianity is that this same Jesus rose from the dead and is alive today. And now, you may not believe that, but that, of course, is the message.
And that's what you have to believe to be a Christian.
Right, and yet I would submit it's not a matter of belief. The resurrection of Christ can be verified through history, and I'm not just talking about the New Testament. There are other ancient writers, some of them non-Christians.
Learning more about that, because I've previously worked as an archaeologist, and I think there's been some archaeology that has proven some of the stories and things that have happened
yes.
in the Bible, but there's a lot that hasn't been proven.
Well, there's nothing in archaeology that's been disproven. One of the famous archaeologists, Kenneth Kitchen, who teaches at the University of Liverpool, he's an Egyptologist, he made an interesting statement. He said, the absence of evidence is not the same as evidence of absence. We're frequently finding things that verify the Bible. We have, as of yet in archaeology, found nothing that contradicts the Bible. But let me tell you about some of these historians. Josephus was a Jewish historian. We know for a fact he wasn't a Christian. He referred to Jesus Christ as a man who was executed under Pontius Pilate, who performed miracles during his day, and who rose from the dead and actually appeared to his followers. He says it very matter-of-factly in a very brief paragraph. Not that interested, because, of course, as a Christian, we wouldn't expect him to be that interested, but he was trying to give a comprehensive account of the lives of people that lived under the time of Pontius Pilate. And then there was Tacitus, the Roman historian, who didn't talk about the miracles, but did at least verify that Jesus Christ was executed under Pilate. We have the Jewish Talmud, which says that Jesus was executed as a sorcerer and an apostate, which was kind of interesting. An apostate was a false prophet or blasphemer. But it's interesting they called him a sorcerer, because in those days, if you didn't like somebody and you didn't want to follow him, but nevertheless you could not deny the fact that he did miracles, what you did is you called him a sorcerer or an apostate of Satan. And what we really have here is a fantastic anti-Christian source with a bias predisposed against Christianity, which nevertheless affirms that there was a Jesus who lived in those days, who was executed, who performed miracles.
Well,
historically, that's pretty good. That's pretty good evidence.
I don't have a problem with that part.
Mm-hmm.
It's the part that a person that's interested in science and evolution has a problem with the myth part, and that's what's hard to prove.
Which part of it are you calling a myth? You're talking about something miraculous?
Well, basically, that Jesus was the Son of God and died for our sins, our so-called sins.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that's hard to prove, and that you have to have faith to believe that. And so for someone that doesn't have faith in that,
yeah.
they want to have a more factual experience about what's going on there. And this is a problem for many people in this day and age, to try to have faith in something that is basically interpreted as a myth now, 2,000 years later. And so
right.
we need a new, in my opinion, Bob, we need a new myth. We need something that's true for our times that everybody can relate to now, that an experience now, instead of having to have faith in something 2,000 years ago. And
okay. But
basically, I do enjoy reading about the history of the Bible and hearing about interpretations of scientists and archaeologists. And
but you would agree that when you call it a myth, you are assuming it's a myth, and you have not yet questioned your assumption.
Because I'm not relying on faith to believe it.
I'm not either. When the men of the Bible, when they used the word faith, did not define it the way Webster's dictionary defines it. The men that wrote the Bible defined faith as obedience. Faith was a Greek word, and they were talking about a decision to obey God, and they assumed that this God would make himself known through a personal relationship and had already made himself known through the resurrection as a historical fact. So what I'd like to suggest to you, Forrest, is that it's not a matter of blind faith. I wouldn't ask you to use blind faith. You sound like a free thinker to me, and I respect that about you. I really do. I wouldn't want to see you use a blind faith about religion or about anything else. What I would challenge is whether it is, in fact, a blind faith, or whether or not it is something that can be validified through history and through an experience where we actually come to meet God. You know what, Forrest? We're going to have to get going and take another call. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm so open-minded, so I will think about it. Maybe we can talk again.
You sound very open-minded, and I respect very much where you're coming from, and it was a pleasure talking to you. Whatever you end up deciding, God bless you, and it was a real pleasure to talk to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care.
KPRZ, your station for Sonic Blood, March 19th at the San Diego Sports Arena. Go to KPRZ.com to find out more. How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
KPRZ San Diego.
We're back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, 1-800-556-1210. Candy, you're on The Bob Siegel Show.
Okay, here's my question.
Sure.
Something triggered me. I was driving home, and I heard the letter from the girl that said, "Does God choose one mate for you?"
Yes.
And then, so my question is not along that line, but what you shared about how you were in, I think back in college when you were
engaged to the wrong person.
yeah, and asking God, okay, if the yellow Volkswagen drives by.
Yeah, and I didn't actually ask something that lame, but it was those kinds of prayers I was making.
I know.
I needed to give that disclaimer.
But I know you were using that as a
my prayers were of a similar quality to that.
Okay, all right. So that's what I understood. So then I was thinking about, gosh, you know what? I kind of struggle with the same thing. I'll go, okay, Lord, I really want to be in your will, and I really want to make the right choice and decision here, but I need to have you make sure, I want to hear you tell me yes or no. So what
I think
I'll
we
do,
would all want that.
Okay, so,
would all want, it would be nice if God just actually told us, and we have assurance that it's going to work out, and we're not going to mess it up.
Yeah, okay, and that's my fear, is that, Lord, if I make the wrong choice or decision, I'm going to have the repercussion to this or consequences to this. So here's my here's a situation where I need to hire an employee for our business, and I'm going back and forth, and I'm like, Lord, I don't know if this is the right person, and I pray about it, and I want to hear a yes inside my spirit, my soul. I want to hear yes, and I'm thinking, am I going about this all wrong? Because logically, it's like, okay, so what am I looking for? What does the person need to have for this position? And does this person meet the needs? And my thing is, I want to hear this yes versus the logic of thinking. You know what I mean?
Well, you're asking an excellent question, Candy, and I do appreciate it.
Yeah.
When we read the book of Acts, most of the time we're reading about the miraculous things. We're reading about the times when God spoke to the Apostle Paul in prison and with an audible voice and said, have no fear, you're meant to go into Jerusalem. And you're talking to somebody who believes God can still do that today.
Amen.
But it's also true, Candy, that one of the reasons we read so much about that in the book of Acts is that the authors didn't find the everyday mundane stuff as interesting, and it would probably put us to sleep listening to it. So all the times when Paul just used his head and made his own decision, such as what he encouraged the Corinthians to do in chapter 11 on the issue of marriage, we're not reading as much about those times. And there are certain qualifications for your job. I assume that this applicant put forth a resume. Probably she's either qualified or she isn't, and there really is no guarantee in life. Now, could God still speak to you and say, get ye henceforth and hire her? Sure, he could. But I don't think he wants you to operate as though it's going to happen that way. There's nothing wrong with praying about it and saying, God, if you'd like to show me, I'd sure like to hear it. But he's not necessarily going to do that. And I think that part of being made in God's image is the ability to make choices and be creative and be intuitive and use our heads. See, God does all those things. And you're in his image. So this is why the Bible talks so much about wisdom. And that's not just in the book of Proverbs, but James talked about praying for wisdom. So another prayer you might want to make is, God, give me the wisdom to make a real wise choice and the courage to stand by my convictions. Because it's not impossible, but it's not necessarily likely either that he's going to do it the other way for you.
Okay, that is wonderful input. Yeah, I was thinking that I struggle with wanting to be doing the right thing. And so that's really good input, and I had a question for you about it. So it's not, so in the times that you don't necessarily, I'm so glad that you believe on the same way that I do, because it helps me be able to communicate better with you, but I'm thinking if I don't hear him, I can still bank on the wisdom.
That is correct.
And the prayer and the fact that I made him in his image, that he allows that freedom for me to make that choice.
Absolutely, and right? Unspiritual as it may sound for me to say it, I think that's the way God wants to work in our lives most of the time. One of the reasons for God doing the Steven Spielberg, George Lucas special effects type of communication is that because of our sin, he sometimes has to club us on the head to get our attention. But probably he'd prefer that we just be using our heads in the first place.
That's very good. Is there anything else you can elaborate a little bit on that? Because I'm one that, and I'm sure I'm one of many, that is probably stuck in that place where, gosh, I don't want to make a move because I'm not hearing from God, and there's a silence here, and I've been praying. Or maybe I haven't prayed enough, and that's why there's a silence. Or maybe this isn't the right person, therefore he's not saying yes or no. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, you know, I can think of a really good biblical example. When the Israelites got to the Jordan River, they probably thought that God was going to part it like he did with the Red Sea. Okay. And here's another excellent example of God not fitting into a box and not doing two things the same way. With the Jordan River, he asked them to start stepping in first, and then the water didn't part, but it actually stopped flowing as they went across the other side. I once heard somebody say God can steer a car that's moving more easily than a car that's parked in the driveway. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. You have good insight. That's helped me. It's good. I'm going to go and chew on that for a while because I need to practice that more often instead of being stuck and fearful that I'm going to make that mistake and just, I'm going to write down what you shared. And I appreciate your time and thank you for your wisdom and insight.
Well, thank you for calling in, Candy, and I'm glad it was helpful for you. God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, Bob, it would be good, I think, sometime to do a show on God's perfect will or general or specific will versus his general will.
Yes, that would be an excellent show to do, as if we know. like we know, you know, if I was waiting for God to give me a sign, I never would have hired Sharon to do this show for me. Obviously, I used my mind, as it were.
Did you hire me?
Oh. We didn't actually hire you. yeah, when's the paycheck, right?
Right.
1-800-556-1210, and Jay from Santee, you're on the Bob Siegel Show.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Jay.
Great show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, if your last caller is still listening.
Well, I sure hope she is, okay. But we wouldn't be able to know at this point.
two words. Background check.
Background check.
Background check. Okay.
See, we not only give wise advice, we have the wisest listeners in all of Southern California.
Good advice, Jay.
Listen, I'd like to get your opinion about a theory I have about the guards at Jesus' tomb, as you were discussing it at your show last week. But first, real quickly, I have a kind of a riddle for both of you. Here we go.
Okay.
Who was the smartest financial advisor in the Bible?
Smartest boy.
We
used to do a lot of these. What was the first tennis game Joseph served in Pharaoh's court?
Who was it?
It was Noah, because when the earth was being liquidated, he was floating stuff.
That's great.
And you heard about the baseball game in the big inning? And with that, we'll go to a break. Jay, hold on with us over the break.
APRZ, 1210 AM. Talk radio you can trust.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
KPRZ, San Diego. And worldwide at kprz.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel, and Jay, you're back on the air.
Well, okay, Bob, thanks.
Now, you know, we're down to our last few minutes, so I'm telling you that ahead of time.
Okay.
We thank you ahead of time for calling in, because it goes pretty quick.
Yeah,
but
it does.
Go ahead in the time that we have and get your question out.
Well, let me just preface this by saying, as you know, I believe 100% in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So this theory I have, I don't want to discuss with you, has no bearing whatsoever or inferences, nor does it shed any doubt at all about the resurrection.
You betcha. No problem.
But I want to address something that one of your guests last week was discussing concerning the guards at Jesus' tomb.
Right.
And some people might say, well, you know, if they were temple guards, if they were Roman guards, so what? What does it matter? What's the difference? The truth is, it doesn't matter at all, except for the fact that the search for truth. We want to keep everything... In other words, your guest last week, if you embellish it all, as you know, no matter how well the meaning is and what spirit it's taken, it may hurt the credibility of many truths and certainties that we do have in the New Testament.
You bet. Facts in their own right are a good thing to have.
King James Version, Matthew 27, verse 64. I'm sorry, verse 65. King James 27, Matthew 27, 65. Pilate said unto them, ye have a watch... go your way and make it as secure as ye can. Now, that's the King James Version. I think you'll agree the most accepted version. Now we go to the International Standard Version, another very well internationally accepted version, Matthew 27:65. Pilate told them, you have a military guard. Go and make the tomb as secure as you know how. And then finally, in the New Living Bible, it states, again, Matthew 27:65, Pilate told them, use your own temple police. They can guard it safely enough. So they sealed the stone and posted guards to protect it from intrusion. Here's my point, and here's my theory on this. The Romans, number one, didn't buy into the resurrection theory, and they were not afraid, they were not as afraid of the theory as the high priests were. So they thought the whole thing was kind of a superstition anyways. It didn't make sense that they would dispatch a Roman guard when they had plenty of temple guards who were perfectly suited for that purpose. Number two, the Roman guards afterwards, and by the way, I do believe that something miraculous happened, because again, I do believe in the resurrection. Obviously something miraculous happened. It might have been an earthquake or whatever it was. But the Roman guards would not have gone running to the Jewish priests with an excuse about whatever happened, because the Roman soldiers would have to go through their chain of command, and that's what they would have done. And thirdly, and then I'd like to get your take on this, the priests would not have been able to placate Roman soldiers with money and promises of saving them from Pilate or any other Roman authorities for falling asleep on duty. However, it does make perfect sense that that would happen if, in fact, they were temple guards, because the temple guards could easily be protected from the Roman authorities since they did not break any Roman laws. The seal was a temple seal.
Okay, let me respond, Jake, okay. In the few minutes that we have left.
Right.
You're making a very good case. I think the case does break down, but like you, we would both agree that the resurrection is the main thing. It would
Absolutely.
Have been unlikely for the Jewish Sanhedrin to want to see any of the temple police do anything on the Sabbath. That was of great concern to them. That's one of the reasons that they wanted to expedite the death, and they didn't want people still hanging around on the crosses, no pun intended, on the Sabbath. Also, we do know historically that there was a number of Roman guards that were put at the will of the Sanhedrin. They were in the fortress called Antonia, which was in existence near the temple and existed for the very purpose of giving the Sanhedrin a few soldiers at their disposal. So although these soldiers were technically under Pontius Pilate, of course, they understood that by obeying the Sanhedrin as Pilate had told them to do, they were obeying Pilate. Now, having said that, Jay, others have taken your position. It's a very respectful position. It may, in fact, have been the temple police. You may be absolutely right about that. But I think they were Roman guards for the reasons that I just shared.
Well, that's a good point, actually, about the Sabbath. Now, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, that's what we do on our show, give people to think. But, you know, if you read Josh McDowell's book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, he makes a case for the temple police and the Roman guards, almost unsure which it is. We got to get going, my good friend. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bob, in the minute we have left, I want to announce for the Jewish Community Center that Jacob Goldberg will be here on March 14th, March 16th, and March 21st, talking about Israel on the domestic scene, Israel and Palestine, and Israel and the international arena, all at 7:30. And for tickets, call 858-362-1348.
See, folks, we're Christians. We have a Christian broadcast, and we're willing to announce something that's going on at the Jewish Center. How's that for tolerance? We will see you next week. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome too.
The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by ProBuild, Primetime Advertising Corporation, Web Studio, W&S Electric Incorporated, and the law offices of Matthew Simone. If you're interested in donating to this radio ministry, check out our website at www.bobsiegel.net. www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and learn how to obtain Bob's books. on our website, you'll also learn about a special offer from Web Studio. For monthly donations of $20 or more to Bob's ministry, we'll give you a complimentary copy of Web Studio, a $90 value. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net. We appreciate your prayers and support, and we look forward to getting together with you again next week. Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent KPRZ or its sponsors.